Happy summer to everyone. We are back with the Language of Behavior. I have Charlie Peck and myself, Joshua Stamper. We are back, and I'm so excited, Charlie, because we have a question from someone that we've just built a relationship with out in Minnesota, my home state. And so one of the teachers that reached out, Charlie, is seeing a difference in regards to attention. They're seeing a difference in engagement in the classroom. And so they're just looking for some strategies to kind of help, because they also understand that there's a connection with classroom management with these tools. And so when you hear those words, the attention of the students or engagement or lack thereof, what comes to mind?
Well, my mind goes to neurodivergence first, because there are so many kids in our public school system. In fact, the statistic is 1 out of 5 of our kids in public schools are neurodivergent, and our system is not set up for them. So is there an assessment that needs to be done is my first thing. But I do believe the world we're living in now, it's harder to capture kids' attention because there's a lot competing for it. So my question really goes to, is not like, how do I make students pay better attention? It's, what is competing with their attention? That's where my mind goes. What about you?
Yeah, I was actually reading a book on emotional intelligence, and they actually talked about impulse control and how over time that has diminished due to what you're talking about, their environment in which they're growing up in. But then also, like, there's studies that have been done through Harvard and other universities, and they were specifically talking about the marshmallow challenge, where put a marshmallow in front of a four-year-old. And they say, you can eat this now, or you can wait 15 minutes. And after 15 minutes, we'll give you 2. And just the results of that, because this was a long-term study, right? We're starting at the four-year-old, but we're also going to follow you until you graduate high school. And the people that waited and had that impulse control actually had a lot of success later on in life. And even, I think it was like plus 200 score on their SATs. Like, there were a lot of things that, you know, the confidence that they had, both the social emotional components that they had internally. I just think it's really interesting. And I think if we think of that impulse control as a muscle and something that we can improve at a younger age, I think that helps, especially for our teachers.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up too. I used to have my students go to our local elementary school and work with students there to do the marshmallow test when we were doing like the scientific method, and they had to design it. And you know what? It is so interesting to follow those kids all through their lives and see that effect. Are you seeing current information on that? Are you saying we're having new data to show that they're comparing to last generation's kids?
So this, just to give some context, they actually used university staff children or local community members, right? People that were around the university, because they felt like they would have a better controlled system to get data when they were older. Obviously, if students moved away, it was a little harder to get those results. Not to say that they couldn't, but that was where they were pulling from. So I think for sure, you know, that's a 14 year span of a study. So that's for sure one generation.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I'd like to see that. Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of things that we can think about, but let's keep it simple. First of all, we need to reduce the cognitive load on kids. So this is for any kid. I always say, even when I teach ADHD in the classroom strategies, like, I always say, whatever you do for kids who have ADHD will work well for other kids. And by the way, when you're leading a staff or you're a manager of staff, no matter what industry you're in, these things can work too, because when we have a heavy load, like we are all in these systems that are just so overloaded and busy, we're busy, that heavy demand does fill us up, right? And we can only take so much. So students can't learn effectively when they're trying to manage too much information. And we better believe that there's a lot of information coming at them in lots of different ways, but also add uncertainty and stress on top of that. It's just so heavy. It's so heavy. So what we need to think about, if we're managing somebody, if we're leading somebody, or if we're leading a classroom, we need to ask, is the task clear? Do we know what it is that we have to do? And even when I'm working with people in therapy sessions, when I'm doing training, even when I'm working with parents, I do a thriving parent now. I teach them the 9 essential skills. Sometimes they have to ask me, can you ask that question again? Because I tend to not be succinct in the questioning, and I tell them ahead of time. I'm like, make sure you tell me to ask the question better because I have a problem doing that and I know it. And so they're like, can you ask that a different way? So teachers, staff leaders, tell your staff, tell your students to make sure they ask you to ask the question better or to be more succinct. And I always say, just try to use less words. So if you're creating a plan, like a lesson plan or a training plan or something, take your question and write it down, the overarching question, and take words out of it. Make it more succinct. I do that all the time. And you can whittle it down and just be super clear. So is the task clear? Like, what do I have to do? Do I know? And is the outcome of what I'm hoping to get to clear? Two very different things. What do I have to do? And where am I trying to go? What does that look like? Sometimes, what does that sound like? What does that feel like? It depends on what you're doing. So the question itself makes a huge difference. And that's only just to address one piece of cognitive load. All right. Speaking of cognitive load, it's your turn.
You're talking about like executive functioning skills. Our dear friend Mitch Weathers does a great job of explaining it. And for me, layman terms, like equating it to calories, like food count, right? We think of our body sometimes as batteries and we only have so much within that scope and we get drained, right? Well, our working memory is like that too. And we're in regards to if we give a lot, it takes more of our energy to process to get to the result. And so it's like burning calories. And so if you can do things and set things up, so it's easier for students, and you can do this through routines, is that to get started, it doesn't take a lot of their working memory to start that task or start that project. Also breaking the work down into smaller steps, that also helps with that calorie count and not burning it through. And then of course, you know, when there's a hard, difficult task that the student needs to do to assist that so that it's not just them get frustrated, quit, all that kind of stuff. And so even like as simple as secondary students, we can say at the end of the day, like, hey, put up your chair at the end of the class period before you leave. And we can leave it at that. our students know that task. It doesn't take much of their working memory because they have been actually instructed at the elementary level how to do that. And in the elementary space, it's obviously a lot different. They have to literally break it up step by step. They have to model it. They have to show them the task in which the students are able to do it because that working memory is a little bit different. So if we think about calories in our setup and our routines in the classroom, we might understand that we actually are expecting quite a lot and it's really tasking them, which is creating those negative behaviors, that's creating that frustration. And so if we can simplify that through executive functioning, I think that helps quite a bit.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, confusion looks like disengagement. So we need to make sure it's the right thing that we're looking at. Yeah, I love that you said all of that. It's great strategy. And it's important to think about. One of the things when kids shut down right away is, do they even know where to start? Do they know where to start? Do they know how to start? So they might know where on the page, but then now what's the next move? So oftentimes those kids know that they're different than their peers when they're stuck. And so they'll behave differently. They'll shut down. They might get silly. We talked about this before in Fight, Flight, or Freeze. We teach about it a lot in the work that we do. So the next question I'm going to ask you guys to think about is essential. Is the environment predictable? So if they don't know where to start, can they predict what to do next? Can they predict that I can go ask my teacher and my teacher will not think I'm dumb? Like in the classroom, is there a step-by-step plan of what do I do when I don't know what to do? Because some teachers are really good about posting that. But you can post it all you want, but if you don't train them on how to use it and drill it into them, like when you're stuck, this is what you do first, second, third, then come ask me because we get overloaded. But can I fail at this task and still feel okay? What happens when I fail? How is my teacher going to respond? That's that social space you and I talk about a lot. How will my peers, how do we help each other out? What's the language like in this environment? So confusion looks a lot like disengagement, but also if it's not predictable, they're going to shut down because there isn't trust that they can protect their ego in that space.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, there definitely needs to be a safe space of of trial and error and not feeling like they're being called out or they're going to be embarrassed or anything like that. So I think that's something that can be built over time for sure in that environmental space. I love this topic, and I know we'll probably bring ourselves back to this eventually, especially as we're getting into the brand new school year. With that, I don't know how you feel, Charlie, but I'd love to jump into do a quick behind the banter.
Let's do it.
Couldn't find the pesky button. All right. So with this week's behind the banter question, I've got, what is one small thing that instantly makes your day better?
Going for a walk outside. If it's warm. If it's cold, forget it. But if it's warm and sunny, oh my gosh, that can instantly do it. Yeah. Or maybe a Bon Jovi song. That could
I was going to say music too, potentially.
Yeah. What about you?
Honestly, I'm a human connection person. So if I get on a call with Charlie Peck or anyone else that's a dear friend, I think that really brightens my day. So I love those connecting points. And as you know, Charlie, in our work, we work from home. And so we don't always have adult interaction the same way we would on a campus or in a district. So I value those times immensely.
Great.
Charlie, what's going on in your world before we close this down? You got anything that you want to highlight?
Doing lots of keynotes. So I'm booking those out, which is great. The Thriving Under Pressure. I guess a lot of people feel like they're under pressure.
Doing that. The new book.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. A lot of trainings. And I do have a 3-day intensive coming up at the end of July. People want to learn how to run the 9 essential skills. So they get to learn it and then they get certified and access to it for a year to facilitate it in their own building. So that's what people have been asking for. So that's what I'm doing at the end of July. What about you?
Well, real quick, before I move on, Charlie, if someone's listening right now and they're like, oh, that actually sounds interesting to me, how would they find more information for that?
Yeah, thanks. They can go to thrivingeducator.org/training.
Awesome.
And it'll be there. Yeah. It's very called cool. The intensive. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that's in the notes for everyone. You asked about myself. Yeah. I think the next thing I have is with AMLE out in South Carolina. We're doing a keynote on the language of behavior and super excited to work with those individuals. Yeah, I think that's the next thing on my docket. And now it's really, we're focusing right now as far as scheduling for those beginning the school year kickoffs. So very excited about those.
Yes.
So for more information on that, if you're looking for someone, our websites are in the show notes also. And I'll throw it back to you, Charlie, for our last piece of this episode, which is your last comment or note.
Yeah. Okay. So let's build emotional capacity here. Attention is not just a cognitive skill. It's an emotional skill. It is a lack of capacity and a skill we can build. So when students are worried or frustrated, even angry or other things going on, they're spending a lot of mental energy managing those experiences. So we can tie in the emotional awareness and the skill building there too to help.
Wonderful. Well, I hope everyone has a fantastic week. And if you need anything from us, as usual, we'd love for you to reach out. If you have a question for the show, there is a form in the show notes, and we always look forward to answering those and providing additional resources. With that, I hope you have a wonderful day. And Charlie, it was so good to see you.
You too. Thank you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.